AM General has worked with the U.S. military since World War II, today producing its indispensable Humvee, and used to make the Hummer for General Motors. Its CEO, Andy Hove, is our guest on this edition of Autoline This Week. And now, here's your host, John McElroy.
I want to thank you all for joining us on Autoline This Week. You know, in the automotive industry, car companies assemble their cars. But not all the time. Sometimes they turn to independent contractors that do that assembly for them. It's a very rarefied club in the world, but we're going to learn about one of those companies today because our special guest is Andy Hove, the Chief Executive Officer of AM General. And Andy, it's great to have you here on Autoline.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Thank you so much.
Joining us today, too, are John Stoll with The Wall Street Journal and Gary Vasilash with Automotive Design and Production Magazine. Great to have the both of you here.
Thank you, John.
John.
Andy, I'm intrigued by what you guys do. I mean, you've assembled all different kinds of vehicles. Give us a quick thumbnail sketch of what are you doing right now?
Well, AM General, it really starts with AM General being a full end-to-end, full life cycle, spectrum capable company. We design vehicles. We're best known for the design of military vehicles, but a wide range of designs. We recently won a contract to design the next generation postal vehicle for the U.S. Postal Service. We produce a wide range of vehicles. Over our history, we've produced 5-ton trucks for the military, produced over 300,000 Humvees. We produce the only wheelchair accessible, purpose-built wheelchair accessible vehicle in the country. We've done contract manufacturing. We produced the H2 for General Motors, essentially on contract for
the Hummer H2.
The Hummer H2 on contract for General Motors, and today are producing the R-Class crossover SUV for Mercedes. So what's happening today is that we're building a luxury German crossover SUV in Mishawaka, Indiana, with the oldest UAW local currently active in the United States, and every one of them gets exported to China.
Now, explain that a minute. Why would a Mercedes-Benz, which has an incredible manufacturing capability of its own, with a plant in the United States as well, why would they go to AM General in Indiana and say, here, build these R-Classes and export them all to China for us? Why would they do that?
Well, I think it was a simple answer. In the specific case for Mercedes, it was a simple matter of capacity. They wanted to introduce a new platform into their plant down in Alabama that was off a common platform with the others, and in that introduction, we're faced with the choice of either adding volume of it was when they introduced their coupe SUV, either adding the volume they needed for the coupe SUV in the United States and foregoing the opportunity to sell R-Class into China, or continue to sell the R-Class to China and forego the opportunity for the coupe SUV in the U.S. And we are, at the end of the day, a solutions-based business. And our solution was to allow them to have their cake and eat it too, and have the opportunity to sell both their crossover coupe SUV and our classes to China.
Andy, in this case, they provided you with the design, the engineering and so on. But you guys have done clean sheet,
Absolutely.
A number of vehicles.
Absolutely. Well, the Hummer, of course. Both the Humvee for the military and the Hummer for the commercial market. The Postal Service will be a clean sheet design. We did quite a bit of the design work on the MV1, and that started when it was still VPG. We were building that on contract for VPG as well. We ultimately bought the business and the design ourselves. But
so that's the wheelchair accessible vehicle that you guys are building.
Yes, and I would point out, that while we have been building the Humvee for 30 years, and obviously it's still badged and named the same thing, but it's kind of like the Suburban that you bought 30 years ago doesn't look like the Suburban that you buy today, and as you might imagine, that is a continuous redesign effort to keep it relevant and modern going forward.
What is the big discussion about the future of this industry? What players are going to come in? What do they really want to do? What do they want to provide? And the common assumption is that many of them don't want to build cars. Google's one probably example 1A, B, and C. Are you in discussions with some of these emerging players and saying, look, this is what we can do? Obviously, the R-Class has a life cycle, and it's going to end at some point, and you're going to need another right. vehicle or more to come down those assembly lines in South Bend.
Well, as I said, we're a full spectrum, from design to production to sustainment on back end. And, you know, we're a solutions business. And we're best known for the solutions that we provide to the military, but we are capable of providing solutions to those problems across the entire spectrum to a whole range of things of customers. So, you know, it's been on us to get that message out to them on what we're able to do for them. And it's not just limited to what we would manufacture for them. I mean, if you think about it, we've designed vehicles from the ground up. If you design a vehicle and you get to a point where you have a prototype and you go into production, the next thing you have to do before you get into production is figure out, well, what's my transition to production plan? And there are very few people in the world who know how to do that. Most of them are the OEMs, right? So the OEMs aren't particularly open to folks like Google on telling them how they're going to launch their vehicle. So we provide a range of those services, and then if it ends up being in our own facility where we manufacture it, great. But we're very open about solving problems, and if that leads to either a greenfield someplace else or a brownfield someplace else, and us providing insight and professional intelligence on understanding of what it takes to get that done, then we offer that as a service.
Well, I understand how you cannot divulge who might be knocking on your door right now, but can you talk about the kinds of companies that are doing so? John mentioned, you know, these mobility startups, if you will, like Google. There's all kinds of others that I think, including OEMs, that are looking for a place like Mercedes did to come to you guys. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about the kinds of companies that are knocking on your door saying, what can you do with us?
Well, it's, for example, I mean, even at the design phase, the three hot topics in automotive are mixed materials, right? How to bond composites to metal. Autonomous navigation and advanced V-tronics, so you can do things like embedded diagnostics on the run in a vehicle. These are all three technologies as a defense and aerospace company we've been dealing with for decades. So we've been talking to a number of customers just about not necessarily designing the entire vehicle with them, but helping them to understand, what it takes to get those technologies integrated into a fully functioning platform.
And are those transferable? I know you have a rugged testing site down the way from where you guys build the vehicles. So I got to imagine that some capabilities are there that are somewhat unknown to maybe the wider world. But if you walked into a client, you'd be able to say you have some extreme conditions that you can even put autonomous through and things like that.
Well, look, frankly, the whole reason I'm sitting here is it is well unknown to a lot of customers who should understand what we're capable of doing. And it's not just limited to physical test facilities. I mean, we have advanced tools and processes for systems engineering, design engineering, test and development. Particularly on the military side, we're not able to do test, build, test. It's incredibly expensive. So just the basic engineering processes and the development processes we have are quite robust, very quick, and extremely good value for the money. I mean, I wouldn't describe us as the lowest cost engineering services company, but we can turn around very effective design and development, subsystems integration on a full spectrum. And then, so you got yourself now to a beta prototype and a producible TDP, and you're scratching your head about, where am I going to go source this? How am I going to do my plant layout? How am I going to build the thing? Mercedes, for example, we started that program with them in December. We reached agreement on the program in December of 2015. We were building the first vehicle in 6 months later, in June of 2015. By February, less than 9 months after starting production, Mercedes has its own independent quality audit team that audits and controls the quality in each of their plants. We pass the same quality audit that all their other plants do. And then, of course, by contract, since we're essentially a subcontractor to Mercedes-Benz, we were required to pass our own independent TS16 949 audit within a year.
And what's that mean? Is it just another specification in the audit?
It's ISO on steroids.
Okay.
And as you might imagine, the auto industry has extremely tight controls on quality in their suppliers. So, but it's unusual that anyone is doing full final assembly. So, while the OEMs generally require it of their supply chain, they typically don't send their own final assembly facilities through a TS16949 ISO audit.
You had to go through the wash twice.
We went through the wash twice, and came out pretty clean as a result of it. But it's a highly differentiated, unique capability that, particularly in the United States, there really is no one.
I mean, no one else.
There are many design bureaus and some great ones, I don't feel like we have to. No one really understands what we're. So I'm sorry, not no one. Very few commercial companies understand what we're capable of doing for them. We're deliberately making sure we get that message out. But even when you get to that, past that point, that transition between, figuring out how to produce what you have, there really is no one else in the United States who provides that kind of a service. The OEMs do it for themselves, and there are a handful of European companies that do that. But then typically that's tied to independent contract manufacturing in Europe, and very few solutions in North America.
Andy, talk to us about the postal vehicle. You said that and went right over it. And I think that's a rather important vehicle because you're talking about mixed materials. I mean, they've been ahead of the curve in terms of using aluminum for bodies. I have a feeling that they're probably looking for autonomous capabilities and so on. Talk to us about that.
Well, we actually, the DS9, the original Jeep-looking postal delivery vehicle, was built by our Heritage company. So when you draw AM General's lineage back to Willys Jeep and Willys Overland, that was one of our product portfolios. We actually the current delivery vehicle that's used by the Postal Service has an aluminum body.
And they're old. I mean, they're really old, right? These were built by Grumman, if I remember right, on Long Island.
Yeah, the original.
They're like 30 years old or something.
But, so the great thing about the body, it's an aluminum body. It generally doesn't rust out and corrode very well. And we actually provide, they will reframe the vehicle, and we build the frames for the replacement frames for the Postal Service today as part of a life extension program that they have ongoing. But in their next contract, it was an extremely challenging. So the contract we won is a design and development phase that there are actually six companies competing for the design and development. And then the idea is for the Postal Service to pick two, maybe three of those designs for final competition in the production phase. Where we are unique in that, crowd of six designers is we're the only one offering the ability to build either a traditional internal combustion engine powered delivery vehicle on the same frame or a hybrid electric or a fully electric, all without changing the overall basic design of the vehicle. And because we've been involved with the Postal Service for so long, it really started with understanding at a very intimate level what the customer needs. So we've actually designed a very unique proprietary postal safety service, which is an overlay of visual assist and driver assist for the delivery person, the postal delivery person to do their job in a way that's unique for them and their delivery challenge.
And all this is transferable to presumably commercial customers. At least the learnings would be beneficial.
Yeah, from our perspective, we deal with the service and the products we provide at a very generic level. We're in no case are we really a mass marketer anywhere. We have a very small set of customers, and we build generally highly specialized, unique vehicles. So our approach is different. We develop very deep relationships with our customer to understand them quite well and understand how they put their vehicles into use. So it's in any case, whether it's the Humvee for the military, whether it's the postal delivery vehicle for the Postal Service, or whether it's a wheelchair accessible vehicle, all which have unique duty cycles and duty modes and how they're used, that it isn't just the regular passenger car. So we have a much deeper insight in that, and then we flow that all the way back into our basic design approach is to understand and reflect that into the design, and then have the ability to transfer it into production and produce it in frankly a way that's relatively low volumes compared to everything else. So it's a unique business.
You're giving me a lot of different opinions on what I'm about to say, but at the end of the day, one of the products that would do very well today if it were on the market would be Hummer. It's a market that's ripe for a big giant SUV with the sort of stance and heritage that Hummer has. Any thought to, and I know GM probably owns some of the intellectual property or at least the naming rights, but doing something in that heritage, given that you still own the Humvee property, you're still building, you've got that home base, that you could do something like that again if the market was open to something like that?
Well, we're certainly capable of building the base vehicle. But as I say, we're a business. For someone like that, they'd have to know the customer community and what the customer would want, and for the demand and the design on that. And I do appreciate your point of view. Is that the pickup trucks you see going around seem awfully large.
She's doing very well right now.
They're doing great. Andy, you mentioned before there's plants with the capability of doing contract assembly for companies in Europe. Magna Steyr probably being the best. They've got a plant now. They're capable of making over 200,000 cars a year. I understand they're looking at putting a second plant in. There's one in Finland, of all places, called Valmet. There's another one in the Netherlands called Nedcar. Mm-hmm. Why so much in Europe, and you're the only guys here in the U.S.?
Well, I think it's reflective of how European OEMs have approached the market, and they've frankly just been much more open to contract manufacturing over the years.
Do you see that changing in the U.S.?
Well, certainly. I mean, it's probably no surprise that Mercedes was our first customer, right? It was not highly unusual to them. And as I've been talking to the U.S. OEMs about what we're capable of the problems that we can solve for them across an entire spectrum of the product lifecycle, and I'm certainly not a commercial automotive historian, but my understanding is that there's been contract manufacturing in North America among the North American OEMs. They would just generally trade off capacity of their own plants to others. And so that kind of went on for a time until it didn't. And that didn't happen in Europe, so it spawned an independent contract manufacturing industry, if you will. And it was never spawned here. And now the OEMs are kind of at capacity and don't have capacity in their own plants to trade off. So we certainly feel the data that we look at it certainly indicates that there is a growing demand for independent contract manufacturing in North America. And certainly it will be for opportunity, you know, not, I don't think, in hundreds of thousands of vehicles, but, you know, 50,000, 100,000 vehicles at a pop is meaningful, in that, and particularly if you look at niche products. And where we're differentiated is in building, you know, vehicles of the size of a SUV or a light pickup truck. The commercial plant that we use is the one that was built for the H2. So from a volume perspective, we're able to do large vehicles in our plant.
So what would your capacity be? I mean, you have the contract with Mercedes now. Let's say that continues on and they give you a new vehicle, and then another OEM says, hey, Andy, I'd like you to build X number of these for us.
Well, the study that we've done is we'd be upwards of about 70,000 units a year. And it would depend on the specific vehicle that we would be doing. But we have laid out our final assembly capability in a way that we can actually do both body on frame and body frame integral vehicles on the same trim line and final assembly line.
With the change in administration and some of the dynamics that may open the door for lower taxes or other items that, you know, even Ford has said may make a better case for American manufacturing in the future, interest rates are low, credit markets are open. I mean, any thought that you would want to expand now and take on more assembly space? I know there's not a lot in America. I can think of the Mitsubishi plant that recently closed, or mm-hmm. some of these General Motors facilities that are still unoccupied. Is that in the cards for you guys?
Well, you know, our basic business is to solve problems for customers. So, if we have an opportunity to solve a problem for a customer and it caused us to add capacity to do so, we'd certainly be open to that. We're not necessarily, not going to be ahead of the market. But to your basic point, I think that, we had felt that this is an attractive business. There's certainly demand in what we're capable of doing, and there had been demand there long before President Trump was elected. And I think if the whatever you take out of the recent news, it certainly wouldn't diminish your optimism that manufacturing in the United States is going to be of interest for a wider range of people.
Presumably, with the proposed defense buildup, you guys may have more military work to do. How will that affect commercial jobs?
Well, we have a manufacturing campus, if you will, in Mishawaka, with a plant that is predominantly building Humvees, and a plant today that's predominantly building Mercedes. We take an approach that, you know, automotive manufacturing is automotive manufacturing, and there are unique aspects for military customers and unique aspects for military customers, and we'll tailor, work processes, tools, capacity to meet whatever our customers' demand is. But then we try and take the approach that at a certain level, it's generic, and how do we build in flexibility and reconfigurability in not only our plant, property, and equipment, but more importantly, our people and how they approach the business, and then our processes and tools, that it's highly adaptive, highly responsive, and flexible.
Mm-hmm. I'm interested in, you've talked about your capabilities. You've got a test track, you've got an assembly plant, you do design, you handle logistics, but you also make engines. Is this just assembly, or are you actually doing machining as well?
We do final assembly both on the engine and transmission. The bulk of it is the engine and transmission. It goes into the military Humvee. Now, we sell both the engine and the transmission commercially. We have built engines and transmissions on contract, much like we build final vehicles do complete final vehicle assembly on contract. We don't do our own, we don't machine our own engine cores or engine blocks, but it's focused primarily on final assembly. And then, but frankly, the more that's all this stuff that you see. The more difficult business problem is managing a supply chain that can make an engine in relatively low volumes not only available but affordable in those volumes. So I think one of our best differentiators that certainly the U.S. military and the U.S. government benefits from, but we've had good discussions with commercial customers on what we can do for them, is in managing supply chain for programs and products that are at relatively low volumes.
When your big customer is the government and the commander in chief tweets something like he did with Boeing the other day, does that send at least a little bit of a shiver in your spine of what could happen about pricing, about any volatility in the contract, or these things go much deeper than that? And you don't expect to see a Trump tweet anytime soon ripping you for the price of a Humvee.
God, I'd hope not. but I'd also be able to tell them, look, we are, but particularly on that, because it's a monopsony. You got basically one buyer and one seller. There's a very deep understanding on the customer's part on what it costs to build a Humvee. There's not a lot of hidden.
There shouldn't be any surprises there. Right. That's right. Look, we're going to have to wrap this up right now. But Andy Hove, thanks so much for coming on. CEO of AM General. Very interesting what you're doing here, that you're the only company of your kind in the United States. It's very unusual, and want to thank you for bringing us up to speed with what the company's all about.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity to get that message out.
Appreciate John Stoll from the Wall Street Journal, Gary Vasilash from Automotive Design and Production. Want to thank the two of you as
thank
well.
You, John.
And of course, want to thank all of you for having tuned in.